Okay.
No Russian accents.
Russian accents.
No. Hey, episode 7.
So now I want to do it even more.
No Russian accents.
Well, we don't have any listeners in Russia yet.
That you know of.
Maybe we'll get a couple listeners if they think that the show is... We're live from Russia. How are you? We love America and we like to send out the love we have for the great U.S. of A. Does it inject your culture or something like that? I don't know.
It is. That's Nate being silly, and I'm Dan.
I'm Nate.
You are Nate. And we have a special guest.
We do. We have a special guest, which we've mentioned before.
We have.
It's my comrade. He's a good comrade. We are hanging out much. We love to hang together, and we play the baseball. It's great.
I think it's the vest is affecting it.
The vest is
here. Oh, yeah, guys. I'm wearing a Back to the Future vest.
It's actually my vest.
It is, but I shouldn't. In it.
Yes.
Is there anything in the pocket?
Because you got to go back in time.
I do. It's one of those springtime / winter or fall time
sleeveless vest,
and it's puffy.
It is.
Can you hear that? Okay. That's what it's made out of, that kind of fabric. We all know what it is.
Right.
Yeah. But it reminds me of what Marty wears in Back to the Future.
It does. I think he has and one I've, just like it. I think I actually stole that from Michael J. Fox.
I think his is more orange, though. This is very red.
Yeah.
But I've made fun of you quite a few times.
For like 2 years consistently. Yeah. So.
Sorry, buddy. I love America. I love American culture and all the movies. Like Back to Your Future. It's good. I love it. You know the Doc Brown? He's got the crazy DeLorean. His wonderful car. American automotive muscle car.
Dan's forehead is now as red as your jacket.
Ah, yeah. Wow. We're off to a great start.
For yeah. So Tom's with us. We've talked about Tom before. He's a good buddy of ours.
Yeah.
I've known Tom, gosh.
Since 1963.
No, since I was 16. So like 12 years we've known each other.
Been quite a while.
Yeah.
And I've known Tom for about 2 years.
About three, I think.
Maybe three-ish.
Yeah. Almost as long as we've known
each other. Yeah. So we have a reason why we have Tom on board today.
Yes, we're doing another 5cc.
A quick shot.
A quick shot of, for TV stuff. We're doing it for Buffy the Vampire Slayer because we had a fun day not too long ago. My wife went out with a bunch of girls, so I invited over the guys, and we played some games.
We did.
And then we had like a Buffy the Vampire Slayer marathon.
We did. Because
we're all fans of that show and Joss Whedon's. And
right.
So we decided to put down our five favorite episodes.
Right.
And even Tom's playing along.
Yep.
And you kids can play along at home.
Do
it. Make your list now.
You're going to make the home game. It's going to be great. I love home game.
And then you can send in your list to iscpodcast@gmail.com.
Yes.
Or slyly got our email address.
Twitter us at iscpodcast.
True enough.
I don't understand the Twitter.
The Twitter and the tweets.
You're going to tweet like a little bird. I love it.
What else can the kids at home playing along expect in this episode?
Well, some movies. And okay. Dan, of course, has a documentary. Go figure.
Yes, that's like 5 of 7.
Yes.
Right. No Green Lantern for you, though.
No, I'm behind on getting my comics.
Right.
For one, probably, because I probably would have talked about it.
But we do have comics.
But we do have comics. I still have something anyways. And you actually have something.
I do as well.
And which is a big shocker, you not having a nerdy old person book.
The book I talked about last week was very entertaining.
Was it?
Yes.
It was translated from Italian.
It was still entertaining. It
would have been better if it was translated from Russian. So he goes down the hallway, and then he finds the picture. Behind picture, he finds safe. It's great. He finds the relic. It's a good time. Yeah.
During the break, I am going to get the vest and the accent away from Nate. We also have video games.
Video games, yes.
Right.
And,
I have something from last year. You have something from this year.
Absolutely. Something that just came out.
Right.
And then I have... You have your crazy theory.
Right.
Which has nothing to do with going back in time or...
Well, it kind of has something to do with...
Really?
No, not really. No, but there... Actually, I could relate Russians to my crazy theory.
Awesome.
Just wait. Wait for it.
But my zombie apocalypse tip does not have anything to do with Russians.
Okay.
Maybe going back in time.
I'm thinking that...
Or at least DeLorean.
The title of the episode is either going to be Russian or back in the time themed.
Yeah.
Right. I just have to kind of come up with that, what that would be.
Back in the USSR?
Back in the USSR. Yeah. You don't know how lucky you are, boys.
Okay.
All right. Okay, well, I think that's enough for our intro.
Is it? Yeah, this is like 5 minutes already.
Right, yeah.
So, just in case you guys missed it, you're on Inject Some Culture.
Episode 7.
7!
Woo-hoo! Lucky 7.
I scratched my knee.
Oh,
I gotta go back in time and warn myself about this.
Well, you come back with us in 30 seconds.
Yes. It's painful under there.
Are you okay?
Like, no, you have like that, what's it called? Like your ceiling?
Stucco?
It's the stucco paint where it's like ridges stick out just for like scratching knuckles and stuff on.
It's when I convert my house to like Saw 7.
Yeah.
Because they're almost there.
Or like the Twilight Zone where they had the blind people and they made the razor blade walls. And
right.
Those were some innovative blind people, I'll tell you.
Well, we're back with segment one. This is
segment
an episode.
Well, it's episode
one.
Seven.
It's episode seven.
Segment one.
Our 5 CCs, Buffy.
Yes, which we've talked about a little bit before that it's a show we really like.
Mm-hmm.
I got into it kind of late, didn't really watch it while it was on TV.
I got into it during season 3, season 4.
I saw episode 1. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Sucked me in.
Well, you know, one thing I should say for the listeners, you know how you mentioned we did the Buffy marathon. The three of us were also in a Buffy game that lasted for about 6 months.
Yeah, role-playing game.
Yeah, which was very entertaining.
Yes, and it was very cinematic style game.
And it was, I think it had success because all of us really enjoyed the TV show, which you're obviously going to hear about for the next couple of minutes.
Yes.
Well, so, I think Tom actually should go first because he's the guest.
Lean a little forward.
Lean into the mic. How's that?
That's really better. Close.
That's really close.
Okay, it's a little too close. It's okay. Back here.
It's okay, comrade. You go as close as you want.
Don't start with accent. I might start too.
You go ahead.
We have to be leaving Dan out here. Pretty soon we're just talking Russian, and he's like, "What? What is this?" Okay,
I got nothing.
Oh,
can you even do Scottish?
No, not really. Right. So with our 5cc list, what we usually do, you can go in reverse order, you can go
they
in
can be
order.
In no specific
they
order.
Could be in they could be in alphabetical order. You could roll a
Cause last
dice.
Time yours was actually a very specific way you
was.
Did. We had our last one, if you didn't hear it, Tom, was our favorite 5 game guns.
Or weapons. Just
weapons from any video game. And so mine was in no particular order, which is the same way my list is now. It's just ones I thought of, and I wrote them down as soon as I thought of them.
That's pretty much the way mine went, too.
Yeah.
So
yeah, go. All you got to do is just, you know, say which episode, which season, and give a rough description.
And we'll talk.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to talk to you.
And mock me mercilessly, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Possibly.
That could happen. Okay. In no particular order. First one I wrote down was Welcome to the Hellmouth, which was season 1, which was the first episode I watched. Which, in the Buffyverse, you can really look at it and say that it wasn't necessarily that good of an episode, per se. But it was the first one. Kind of sucked you in. I was really expecting just to mock it mercilessly.
Yeah.
So, me and my friend were watching it, and it does have what I think is one of the best lines from any Buffy thing, and that was the that is so DeBarge, and it just made me and my friend laugh because we knew Like, maybe only 10 other people got it.
I don't get it.
Yeah, Nate has that look. You might have to explain that to him.
Yeah, what's DeBarge?
DeBarge was this, like, manufactured, pop-ish kind of band. I'm trying to remember the name of their song they did. It's like Middle of the Night or something like that.
Okay.
You know, it was in the 80s. They wore jackets like the one you're wearing, sort of.
Awesome. And, 1985 no. called says, it can't have it back.
So yeah, enough. That's... They said that and we just laughed, and at that moment I was like...
Let me ask you something real quick. Did you enjoy the movie?
Yes, I did.
So when you went into watching the TV show, did you have certain preconceptions?
Not really. I really expected it to be a bad TV show. I was, you know, I really expected it to maybe like be off the air after 3 episodes, and I wasn't going to watch the other 2. But at the time, I was playing Pyre a lot, so I was in with the genre. So I'm like, I'll watch it. It'll be a laugh. But it caught me. It sucked me in. Got me like a fish on a hook.
See, I really liked the movie, and when I heard about the show, I was like, this is going to be stupid. So I didn't watch it. Plus, I was still in high school, so.
Yeah, the movie I have kind of less than great opinions about.
See,
which is kind of weird for me, considering I am such a big fan.
And he wrote it.
And he wrote it. I just
Josh Whedon wrote it.
Maybe I just watched it. I just wasn't ready for it. But,
maybe.
And then, you know, we talked about it, I think it was in the very first episode, and how a lot of people can't get past the title of the name.
Oh, sure.
When you explain it to friends or whenever you list, like, your favorite episodes or favorite TV shows of all time, I always say Buffy. And more often than not, I get, you know, those looks like... Seriously? You can't pick something a little bit more?
And doesn't it seem like it's a show that, like it's weird that 3 guys sat around and watched a show called Buffy the Vampire
Slayer? It does, because if you watch it,
you know it's not a girl show, necessarily.
If you watch some of, like, the behind the scenes, like, in the DVDs, some of the documentaries, the mini things, they talked to, like, some UCLA professor who actually taught a class on Buffy, like, you know...
They'll let people teach stuff about
female power in popular media, or it was titled something, you know, stuffy like that. But the fact that it actually has a college level course taught about the mythology of it, it's just not, it's not in the same category as everything else that was disposable TV wise.
Well, and it had a whole verse, like, you know, what you said, the Buffy verse. It definitely does have its own mythology to it. So your first one was the very first episode.
Yes, that. Season 1, episode 1.
Good stuff. Introduced all the characters.
Yeah, pretty much. Most all of them were in it, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I put down my second one. I put down Hush. Just a great episode, just especially since easily half of it, nobody says anything.
Yeah, it's just got the music going. Season 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and has one of the coolest bad guys is the gentleman.
The gentleman.
The gentleman.
It's creepy, and they're on like
invisible segways.
Yeah. Half a segway.
Definitely explains communication without explaining communication.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where it definitely pushed the actors to be able to convey emotion and things.
This was one of the episodes we watched during our marathon.
The scene with the overhead projector. It's just like where she starts doing the jerking off motion.
Right.
It's like, what?
Giles showing everything in his horrible pictures.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those
wonderful stick figures.
Yeah.
Giles is awesome, by the way. He's like, I think maybe my favorite character from the show. Anthony Stewart Head rocks.
He does.
All right. Go on, Tom.
Okay, my next one was The Wish.
Another one we watched.
Mm-hmm. Okay, another one we watched. A particularly good episode. Does the whole what if scenario played out to the fullest.
If Buffy never came to Sunnydale.
Introduces Anya for the first time.
Yep.
And mentions Cleveland.
It does, which was the basis of our game.
Pretty much our whole game was based on that episode.
Yep. And let's see. Oh. And, of course, the best part about it is hot vampire Willow.
Willow is all sorts of hot. Yeah.
Yeah, it could have been a crappy episode. It'd still be on my favorite. just for that. The next one I have down, that was from season 3. The next one is from season 4 again, Fear Itself.
Which is on my list as well.
Which is the best ending ever for one of their monster hunts.
It was one of those ones that Tom told me about, like, when I first started borrowing them from you, Dan. Mm-hmm. And I was like in season two or something, me and AJ were watching them. And Tom's like, oh, this is one of my favorite episodes with this little, this demon and at the end. And I was like, well, that sounds really good, you know. So I watched it and I kind of had high expectations of it. And it lived up to my expectations on it because, it, you know, usually when you hear a story from someone else about like a TV or a movie, if they're excited about it, it always seems their explanation is better than the actual movie or TV show itself.
Right.
So when I was watching, I was like, yeah, it's not going to be as good as he said. But the bunny suit is one of the things that...
Yeah, bunnies freak me out. Nope.
Anya's fear of bunnies.
I have a theory.
Yeah.
Could be bunnies.
But yeah, that's a good one because the Halloween episodes are always good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in case you haven't seen it, we're not going to spoil it for you, but like I said, good ending.
The ending
that
is one of the better endings. I think that's when they kind of hit their stride too, about that part of season four when they kind of transition away from their high school days to college,
yeah.
And there's a different vibe.
Oh yeah, the whole overall it's just better.
Yeah, because Giles starts converting from his whole librarian phase to his magic box. Well, that's even pre-magic box.
He's like in his midlife crisis
at that point.
Yeah,
yeah,
where
that
he did the singing
car,
and the coffee
yeah.
shop thing. Yeah.
Okay, so that was Fear Itself, Season 4. My last one, but once again, in no particular order, was Grave from Season 6, the one where Willow just went completely bonkers and was flaying people. And
on my list as well, but for a different reason.
Well, my main reason for it was the ending scene, the last scene where...
Oh, with Xander and Willow?
Yes,
it's so good.
That was... brought a tear to my eye.
Tear was good.
Yeah. It was
the whole crayon scene, where he talks about the crayons. Like,
yeah.
You know, you stole my crayon in second grade or something like
yeah.
that.
Well, the
yeah.
cool part is it was finally Xander, the only guy who, throughout the whole show, doesn't have any powers.
Nothing.
Has nothing special about him except for he sort of knows military stuff from one episode in season one.
And the coolest thing about him is when he loses his eye, he gets to wear an eye patch.
Yeah. That's... But it's so cool because he... averts the apocalypse
twice.
Well,
kind of. There's that Zeppo episode where they're fighting another apocalypse kind of off screen.
Oh, yeah.
The whole zombie thing, and they're trying to do something.
Well, that's a great episode.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, this is the time where he does it. You
yeah,
know, like,
okay.
The apocalypse is stopped by Xander,
yep,
the guy with no powers, and it's great. So.
And that completes my list. So.
Very nice.
But.
Do you want to go next?
I'll go next.
Yeah, why don't you go next?
I will go countdown fashion. I had Hush as my number 5, which we already talked about, which is the silent episode, which was pretty good. It also, I thought it had some good Riley stuff in it.
Yeah.
Because well, Riley was one of my favorite characters and kind of, I thought, underutilized, even, to an extent.
I can understand that, but that's also part... of the character concept was
that she can't have.
Yeah, we really couldn't do too much more
after the initiative thing was played out.
Right,
right.
Well, and once he stopped being like the somewhat super soldier guy, it was like, how much longer can he, you know, hang around with Buffy?
Right.
You know, other than being a well trained version of Xander,
yeah.
who's not funny. So,
my number 4 might be my. Favorite in the category of underrated episodes, which is Conversations with Dead People. It was a season 7 episode. This is the one where the first is kind of starting to gain power in season 7, and it appears to all of the cast in various ways. It appears to Willow as a girl who had died a couple episodes before from Sunnydale, kind of talking via Tara, supposedly. Joyce, Buffy and Dawn's mom, appears to Dawn temporarily. Buffy fights a no-name vampire that she went to school with in a cemetery. But during the whole episode, all of these people talk and kind of sum up everything that's happened up until that point. The talk between Buffy and this no-name vampire is like is actually like kind of like philosophical at
well,
times.
Well, therapeutic for her almost.
Yeah. And it sums up, like, if you had never watched a Buffy episode and just kind of caught that in the middle of that episode, it gives you an essence of Buffy, what she had gone through for, like, the previous 6 years
especially the season six and what was going on in season seven.
Yeah, and how the, you know, the overwhelming obligation and responsibility she has.
Yeah.
To the point where it's almost suffocating.
Yeah.
So that's on my list. I really enjoyed that episode. I have Halloween, which I think you referenced a couple of minutes ago. This is season two. This is where they had dressed up. Ethan Rain, which was a reoccurring villain of Giles' past.
Yeah.
Has a Halloween shop. Everybody buys costumes. This is how Xander gets his military training. Buffy dresses up what is a Southern Belle.
No, it was a princess, wasn't it?
No, it was Southern Belle.
Southern Belle.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Willow dresses up as
a slut.
But that was just using Buffy's clothes. That right, she got the ghost costume that she turns
into
herself.
A ghost. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that episode's just really fun. And
well, and the whole time it was funny because that's where Spike is, you know, was first in season two. And he's talking about how it's the day off.
Yeah.
Halloween is all it's the so supernatural creatures' day off. Is they're not going to go around and do stuff on Halloween because it's so tacky and lame.
I think that's the first episode, too, where Willow sees Oz, and they really start showing Oz a little bit more than just
it's where Oz starts to notice Willow.
You're right.
Because he sees her in the slutty outfit. Who's that
girl?
Like, who's that girl?
Right. You're right.
Yeah.
So that was number three on my list. Number two is kind of a two-parter, which is how season three ended, which was Graduation Day, part one and part two. Graduation Day, of course, had the whole school blowing up, the mayor turning into a
giant snake,
had a lot of Faith stuff in there. But the reason why I put it on is because my favorite part of Graduation Day is when Faith and Buffy have a shared coma/dream experience.
Yeah.
And that whole sequence, they reference things that happen for the next 2 years. As far as I can tell, it's the first time you ever see a direct reference to Dawn, a full year and a half before you actually see Dawn on screen, kind of references some of the things that they're going to go through the next year, which they kind of do a follow-up to that whole dream at, which is the whole and the end of season four, which is what we watched during our marathon, the whole Cheeseman episode.
Yeah.
Where Tara, the cheese. And then Tara has a whole dream sequence and says, be back before the dawn. And I because a lot of people don't like the introduction of Dawn as a character.
I actually was furious that first episode where she goes in the house.
She doesn't have a sister.
She's like, Mom, why is she in my stuff? I'm like, what's this bullshit? I was like, she doesn't belong in the show.
And I kind of felt similar, like, I'm maybe not that strong. I was a little frustrated. Part of that was because they had changed networks. Season 5 was when they had changed networks, and they were probably trying to do something different. But at the same time, it wasn't totally out of left field.
Well, when you see the next episode, you get it.
Yeah.
It's just that first, where you first see her at the end of the first episode or whatever that season, it was like, what?
But yeah, I really enjoyed that episode because of some of the stuff they set up, and I really enjoyed a lot of the Faith episodes. I thought they actually did better job with Faith's character and Angel, especially towards the end of Angel when after she is in prison for a while and she gets out, and they have so that's number two on my list. And number one, without question, is Once More with Feeling, the musical episode,
which is number one on my list as well.
Right.
Yeah, like I have the music on my iPod. I listen to it, like especially if I'm having like a down day or something. I'm just like, you know what, Spike, cheer me up.
There is probably more days in a calendar year that I'm singing a song from the musical than without.
Yeah.
Just randomly.
Now, I had never seen it until our marathon. I had heard about it, and the concept is really, really, let's just call it out there. Because when I first read, because I read it in the TV Guide or whatever it was I saw it in, and I was like, this is going to suck. And I didn't specifically not watch it that week, but for some reason I missed it. And I was like, well, that was probably a good episode to miss. And then everybody's like, it was great. And I'm like, yeah, they're singing. How great could it be? But then, yeah, it actually is a really good episode.
Yeah, see, and like when I remember hearing about it as well, and I was still of the opinion, because I had never watched any of it, I was still of the opinion the show was stupid. Without ever watching it, I was like, this is stupid. And then when I was like, a musical episode? Of course, this show's going down the tubes. Any minute now, even though it's the sixth season, it's going to finally drop off and die.
Right.
And I really wish I had watched it back then.
I watched it.
I had a lot of moments like that when I was that age, though. Right. Like, I was talking about Pulp Fiction. I did the same thing. Yeah. I was like, that looks stupid. I'm not watching it. I was a dumb kid.
I remember they had hyped up that episode for a good 2 weeks beforehand.
And yeah, well, they put a lot of work into it. And oh, yeah. Watching the behind-the-scenes thing is really cool, too.
Yeah.
And if I'd have known they had another bunny reference, I probably would have watched it.
Yeah. But,
And we got to get Tom to watch. We mentioned this at our marathon, but that episode obviously led somewhat directly or maybe indirectly to Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog.
Which I was going to borrow from you, actually.
Right. So.
But yeah, it's such a great episode. Like, I wish I had just that episode. You know, like, I might end up buying season 6.
Just to watch,
so I can put it in every now and then. Just be like, yep, I'm going to watch this episode.
It does. It puts us, you can't help but put a smile on your face.
I was telling you before where I was trying to find it on, because they have, like, season 1 through 5 on iTunes.
Right.
And I was like, well, I'll just get just that episode. I'll be able to watch it on my iPod. They don't have 6 or 7 on there. Probably because, like you said, they changed networks at that.
Right, yeah.
So.
Contractual obligations.
Okay.
So what about your 5 list?
My 5 list. Well, I'll go the other way down, but they're not really in any particular order. But definitely my number one is Once More with Feeling. I love the majority of the songs in it. And some of the ones I didn't like at first are even growing on me more now.
Mm-hmm.
My second one is, I hate to say it, but it's almost one of the only episodes in season 5 I really liked. Because season 5 was kind of a lackluster.
Most people consider it the weakest season.
It was the weakest bad guy of all, and overall it just didn't have that, you know,
badass. Adam was kind of weak, too.
Yeah, Adam was hella weak, but there was a bunch of cool stuff otherwise.
Yeah.
But The Gift is the last episode of the 5th season. It's where they finally confront Glory and Ben, and, you know, they're going to kill Dawn and open up this rift in time or whatever. The reason I like it so much is because it's got one of the most badass scenes ever. At first, between, like, because Buffy was kind of being, like, kind of a bitch that whole season. You know, like, moody and things like that, which kind of really didn't go away too much after that, because then she died and all those things. But she's like, listen, you're not killing my sister no matter what. I'll kill you if you try. But the best scene comes. She smacks down Glory. Glory reverts to Ben. And Giles suffocates him to death. And he's like, you can tell he's doing it more or less for his daughter, which is the way he kind of pictures Buffy.
Right.
And it's just such a badass scene, because he says, you know, are you okay? Can you move? And Ben's like, oh, I'm okay. You know, she's never coming back. And he's like, no, we both know she is. And he just grabs him over his nose and mouth and suffocates him. It's like, whoa, what a badass. So that was great. Number 3 that I wrote down was Fear Itself, which we talked about with the Haunted House episode. Number 4 on my list is Lies My Parents Told Me from season 7. It's, we watched it, actually we watched both those episodes for our marathon, but Lies My Parents Told Me from season 7 is where Principal Wood decides he's killing Spike, and Spike is trying to get rid of the control that the First has over him, and you get to see some more backstory on Spike. You get to see his fight a little bit with Nicky Wood,
yeah,
who was a Slayer from the 70s.
Yep.
And he ends up getting him into a garage full of crucifixes and crosses and tries to beat up Spike. Spike kind of breaks the control he has by figuring out or remembering that his, you know, when his mom became a vampire, when he turned his mom into a vampire, she was a demon and not his mother anymore. And it's just a really cool episode, especially for Spike, who's...
That was in season 7?
Yeah.
I think even before that, I think they started hitting their stride in a sense that they started doing a lot of flashback episodes. They did that a lot in Angel whenever they would
do it. At the last season of Angel, they really did. Well, they
would show a lot of backstory. Well, even in season 2 or 3, when they would show a lot of backstory involving Darla or Drusilla.
Yeah, in the colonial, or, you know, that kind
of. Some of those were some of my favorite episodes. They always had that storytelling mechanic down really well.
Yeah. But it's just, I thought it was just a really good episode overall, because I did like Principal Wood as a character. I thought he was pretty cool. So, then my number 5 is actually the two-part ending for season 6, which is Two to Go and Grave. Not so much, though I do like the Willow going crazy and Giles coming back in the last episode and things, but I really like where you see what's going on with Spike and he's fighting all these things. You're not sure what he's doing, and he's going through all these tests. He fights this guy with like flame hands and some other stuff, and then you realize at the very end that he's getting his soul back, mm-hmm. so he can come back and have his soul, so he can be with Buffy. And I just thought that was a really cool story for Spike.
It was, and they did sort of set that up, that he was getting something to not necessarily get back at her with, but
yeah.
It seemed like he might have been, you know, like getting an Uber weapon to, so he can finally kill Buffy.
Or, you know, just because he had the chip out of his head.
Yeah.
And so he was able to hurt people again. And, when he left, he said, I'm going to come back a changed man.
It's right.
Like, oh, he's going to come back evil again. Mm-hmm. And he actually came back. Well, he sort of did, I guess, when you see him season 7. He's nuts.
Yeah. Down in the basement for a couple of episodes. Yeah.
Oh, suddenly you can feel guilty, kind of.
Yeah. For being such a bad
season
person.
6 might actually be my favorite season.
It's really good. Season 7's got a lot of
season
good
seven's,
stuff to it.
Season 7's a train. It's just on a... Just barrel, yeah, it's just it barrel downs the track.
Yeah,
as soon
really
as the potentials,
yeah.
as soon as the potentials all arrive at the house, it doesn't stop until the end.
Well, especially we were talking about what was it like season 3 or 4 where they first introduced the first,
mm-hmm.
and then
they had a Christmas episode.
Yeah,
where she
and they
falls
bring him
down.
Back like yeah. 4 seasons later. They're like, uh-huh. he's the bad guy.
Uh huh.
So they did a good job with that. Joss Whedon is great, which we've talked a lot about. We liked Firefly.
Firefly was great.
And Serenity is a great movie. Mm-hmm. I really wish he had actually done, or they went and did a season 8.
Yeah, and well, for that, well, which they did with the comic books, but just like the whole thing that he did with Serenity, you can sit down and watch Serenity, never have ever seen Firefly, and watch it. It's
yeah,
a great
and
movie.
Enjoy it.
And it pretty much explains everything.
They talk about the Reavers. They
yeah.
touch on every
yeah.
big
they
subject.
Touch.
I actually watched Serenity before I saw Firefly, and then it made Firefly more enjoyable, except for the part where I knew Wash was going to die.
Yeah, that,
that was the only part of like, because then you really get to like it, and you're like, oh my god, that's why
it's going to die! Come on.
Or Book.
Oh, Shepherd Book.
Shepherd
yeah.
Book. Yeah.
Yeah. He was... That was the other problem, was they never explained his thing.
His background. Yeah,
there's
something
two
there.
Two comic books that they have out that are like trades, mm-hmm. and I've read one, and it touches on it again, but it doesn't tell you, and I'm like, damn it, I want to know what his background
the whole
is.
The way Fox treated Firefly is like one of the great TV injustices.
Oh, I know.
Because they not only did they cut that season short and canceled it, but they showed all the episodes out of order when they originally aired.
Yeah.
Well,
like,
they,
everything
what,
you can
three
do.
Episodes on,
that
you
were
buy
unaired.
The yeah, they were unaired.
Yeah, everything
which are
you.
Some of really good ones.
Everything you can do to kill a show. It's almost like they went out of their way to kill
it.
It
was on for like, what, 7 episodes? Aired?
I forget exactly.
Or something like that, 6? And they switched it, like, within 6 episodes, they switched it from, like, 4 different nights.
Right.
Yeah, that show was... I remember... See, that was another show where I remember seeing the trailer, or the, like, commercials for it. I'm like, that's gonna be stupid. Space Cowboys? Stupid.
I tell people all the time, I mean, that... It's easy to make this statement, but Firefly is more of a Western than it is anything
oh,
else.
Oh, yeah, and it's good. It's,
and, frankly, if you're a gamer, if you've played any role-playing games... You will love it because everything in it is all gamer dialogue. It's everything your character has ever said.
And there's an archetype for every... You can find a character that you've played on that show.
That's the paladin. That's the fighter.
Yeah.
That's
and most people, most gamers will say, I've played Jane.
Yeah.
I've been Jane before. Like, that's easy, you know. But Nathan Fillion is awesome.
Yeah, the dialogue that they write for him. Yeah. Just the way... His way with words.
Well, and just how badass... Joss Whedon did such a good job, especially in the later seasons of Buffy and on Firefly, where you're like, you really feel for the characters. And when there's the episode in Firefly where the oxygen's running out of the ship and he sends everybody off, you're like, oh my god, make it! You need to make it! Get that part in there! Do it! And it's like, I know there's like 3 episodes after that, so I shouldn't be too worried, but I'm like, oh my god! He's gonna die! Get the part in there! Get the oxygen back in!
But that is the one thing, though, except about Shepherd Brook. The whole thing is, that's the only thing that makes you want to go to a convention, meet Joss Whedon, and shake him.
Yeah.
What?
What is the deal with Shepherd Brook?
Tell me now!
you don't tell me, I'll kidnap you and make you write the rest of this show.
Break your ankles.
Yeah, pull misery on him. In the book, she cut off his foot.
The hobbling was a lot worse. Than, sledgehammer to ooh.
Both of them. Yeah. So that's our TV. Yeah. Wow, we're already.
Yeah, we're. Well, speaking minutes. Of movies, we could probably just dive into our movies. Yeah.
I'll talk about mine first.
Yeah, by all means, I was going to suggest that.
Yours got the crazy theory.
Theory, after, right? Yes.
Okay. Well, mine is a movie I've seen a couple times. I just watched it again recently called Stranger Than Fiction, directed by Mark Foster and written by Zach Helm. I was informed that neither Tom nor Dan had seen the movie.
Never.
Most people know it's got Will Ferrell in it, Maggie Gyllenhaal, Emma Thompson, Dustin Hoffman, and Queen Latifah. The director, Mark Forster, is known for doing Finding Neverland, Monsters Ball, among other things, Quantum of Solace, which I actually really didn't like Quantum of Solace too much.
It wasn't as good as Casino Royale.
No. It was, I think it was a bad idea to do a
direct sequel like that.
Especially because it seemed like they ran out of story for that one. But anyways, Stranger Than Fiction is a really interesting story. It's the plot is that Emma Thompson's a writer. She writes...
I know the movie you're talking about now. I've always wanted to see it.
She writes tragedies about simple people, their lives, and they always die at the end. Well, she's writing a book, and it happens to be... The book she's writing about is about this real guy named Harold Crick. So Will Ferrell plays Harold Crick, and he starts hearing her narrate as he's doing these things that she's narrating about. And everything she says comes true. It's not that she's making them happen. It's just one of those cosmic who knows why kind of thing. But she ends up at one point says, little does he know that he was soon to die. And so Harold freaks out because he's like, oh my God, why am I going to die? But he looks like he's going crazy because he talks, you know, he's like yelling at the narrator voice, which no one else hears. He ends up meeting Maggie Gyllenhaal, who owns a bakery, and there's kind of a love story. But he's trying to figure out if he's in... After meeting Dustin Hoffman's character, who's a professor of literature...
Right.
He tries to find out if he's in a comedy or a tragedy. And so he's got this little... At one point, he's got this little book, and he's got comedy on one page and tragedy on the other. He's got putting tally marks, and... By the end of the day, he's got three tallies in comedy, and the pages fill for tragedy, and he's like, oh, I'm doomed. But he ends up finding the writer and talks to her, and I'm not going to give away what happens at the end, but everyone, I know people, it didn't do well because people were like, oh, it's another Will Ferrell movie, it's another Anchorman, it's another comedy. And yes, it is a comedy, but it's also a drama. And it's
kind of in the way, I haven't seen this, so I don't know if this is inappropriate, kind of like when Jim Carrey had done comedy, 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 and then did Truman Show?
Yes, very much like Truman Show.
Okay.
Or even the way a lot of Adam Sandler movies have gone, where it's like Spanglish is a good example. People were like, oh, this is going to be hilarious, because when they advertised it, they showed funny parts of it.
Right.
It's a very serious movie for the most part. And I have to say, I think comedians are stealing Hollywood as serious actors.
Long is not Dane Cook.
Though there is one. In Mr. Brooks, it's his scenes are really awesome because he wets himself at one point. So, but no, I think like Robin Williams made a really good transition. Like, it almost shocking, you know, to see Robin Williams doing like What Dreams May Come.
Oh, yeah.
And things like that. Adam Sandler... In Rain Over Me is one of the best
drama movies
I've ever seen,
that
period.
Is a good movie.
And he is, I'd almost put him as one of my top favorite actors just because of his transition has been so well done, and he's actually taken some of that stuff and put it in his comedies, you know, where they're not complete comedies the whole time. But I just gotta say, I really enjoy the movie. It makes me smile. When I'm watching it, it's a fun movie. It's one of those, like, which we were talking about when we talked about A History of Violence.
Right.
This is one of those movies that you feel better when you're leaving it than when you walked in. So I recommend anyone to see Stranger Than Fiction.
Let me write that one down. I gotta remember that.
But I'll probably be buying it soon because I really
it sounds interesting it. Based on what you described. And I do like when comedians are able to make that transition.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I liked Truman Show. We mentioned that.
Yeah.
Rain Over Me was a great movie.
Oh, my God. That movie just makes me bawl now.
That's really sad in some parts.
Yeah. And they don't overdo the 9/11.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm done in there, with my movie now. But it's not overdone. And the director and writer, yes, go see Stranger Things and some other comedies.
Like I said,
and
other
movies. Listen to me before.
That's hands down his best movie.
I know movies.
He's the guy that plays Sugarman in it.
Okay, and Green Lantern.
He's the one that wrote it. I believe he wrote it. I know he directed it.
It's one of those things that it was so funny.
That was almost one of my movies.
Right.
For one of the
episodes. Everybody there knows all these horror movie things. And they've all watched horror movies. It's all they watch when they go to the dorms or whatever.
And I feel like such an outcast because I'm like, you know, man, one of my favorite movies is, you know, this like drama comedy thing, you know, like stuff like that.
Right.
And it's like, it was so weird because my one friend that I met out there, you know, we're still good friends now, he saw a bunch of new stuff he had never seen before when he'd come over to my house because I had all these different movies.
Yeah.
So, but okay, your turn.
I have a documentary.
Oh my God, shock and awe.
It's a sports documentary.
Shock and awe!
Have I had a sports documentary before?
No, but you talk about sports before. You had a sports book.
I had a sports book.
And actually, that was one of the lengthiest talks you had on the show. You were like...
What are you trying to say?
You're like a girl about clothes.
You were talking about Tether, Care Bear, Green Lantern people once for 15
Star
minutes.
Star Sapphires, and I did not talk about it for 15 minutes.
Yeah, you did. I will go
get... Tom...
I'm not laughing at you.
Oh, okay.
They had tether power and they connected via love with one another.
See, now you're trying to misdirect the audience from your...
Did they connect to each other?
Connect to each other.
There was a physical tether that went from like one chest to
another. They don't go to another person. They tether. That's the way they travel from one point to another.
Cool. Sure. Okay. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. No, we're doing this now. Let's talk about sports, buddy.
Actually, the documentary is really not about sports.
Really?
Okay, I apologize.
No, it's too late.
No, because I want to have a serious discussion about my documentary.
Let's do that.
You're not. I see the look in your eye. I'm going to... Do you
see the fire behind it?
I do. I'm going to hope that Tom bails me out here. All right. Please.
I was clearing my tongue.
All right, my
Are
documentary.
You worried about everything I do now?
Pretty much.
Okay.
My documentary is entitled Harvard BTL 2929. I know what you're thinking. Dan, they have the same score.
Did they go back to the future?
No, they did not go back.
To 2929?
No, they did not.
They still play football?
Maybe.
2929?
So it details the game between Harvard and Yale in the year 1968. Yale was.
The year you were born.
No, it wasn't. Yale was really, really, really good. They were nationally ranked, which if you pay attention to college sports even a little bit now, Ivy League schools, those days are long since passed. Yes, Tom? Tom's raising his hand.
This is a football game?
Yes, football game, 1968.
Could have been baseball, I don't know.
I was thinking it was like the rowing, because that's all those Ivy League schools
I'm going to start explaining. And actually, I'll try to stay away from the football, because the documentary is interesting, like, I guess it was on TV, like a local Boston channel, news channel, showed the game. And when they do the documentary, they'll talk to somebody, show a couple of key plays, talk to somebody else, show a couple of key plays. But they really don't concentrate too much on the action on the field. They talk about all the interesting differences about Harvard and Yale, which I'd like to talk about. So number one is the background of the players. And this is still true today. It's really interesting when you talk to like a set of Harvard students versus a set of Yale students. I think the popular misconception of people who have nothing to do with Ivy League or higher education, some people think Harvard and Yale are interchangeable. You think of Ivy League, you're thinking rich, white kids, really privileged. And Harvard and Yale couldn't be more different if they tried. Harvard students tend to be from middle class, Midwestern communities where they just work their asses off to get a scholarship. And Yale are the people who are the silver spoons, had everything handed to them. The dichotomy between the two is crazy. One thing I'm going to mention later is the number of famous people that are connected to this game. George Bush's roommate played in this game for Yale, and Al Gore's roommate played in this game for Harvard. And
That's why they hate it. Now I know.
Well,
it's all this game's fault.
Obama's from Harvard. You'll notice, like, the majority of presidents are either from Harvard or Yale. And it's the differences between them. Harvard people tend to be, you know, from poor, less advantageous economic backgrounds. And the Yale people are, you know, you'll find out, like, my grandfather's grandfather and everybody in my family have all attended Yale. It's a reoccurring theme you'll hear. But the movie was released, the documentary was released in 2008. It was directed, filmed, interviewed by a man named Kevin Rafferty. In the credits, he pretty much has everything listed under his name.
Nice.
He almost had zero help doing this. It was later turned into a book, released with the same exact title. They talked about how both of the team's coaches couldn't have been more different. Harvard's coach was universally despised. Yale's coach was universally loved. They talked about 1968 and Vietnam and how the schools kind of treated it different. Yale kind of treated Vietnam as if it didn't exist. Harvard, there was protest in campus every day. One of the best defensive players for Harvard went to Vietnam for a couple of years and then came back, so he was a little bit older, an older student. So there was all these things, like, it's basically a typical yin-yang thing.
Do they still wear those silly helmets without the face guards in 68?
Yeah, it does look...
Like where they're barely wearing pads.
It looks like they have
like a cereal box.
Yeah, it very...
Shoulder pads.
It has a specific look and feel when you watch the highlights of the game. But I wanted to mention some of the famous players and connections, and this is where it might interest you guys. So Al Gore's roommate in Harvard?
Right.
Tommy Lee Jones, the actor.
He that was played. His roommate?
That was his roommate. He played guard. George Bush's roommate was a man named Bob Levy, who dated Meryl Streep, among other people, and is now like a little bit in the world of business. Jack Ford, who's done, news like on NBC, and I think somehow related to the Kennedys, if I'm not mistaken. You've probably seen him on TV. He's done a couple of various things. He was in it. There was actually somebody who ended up going to the NFL. If you're a sports fan, Calvin Hill will sound familiar. His son was Grant Hill, who's a modern-day basketball player, but he played for Yale. There's just all these weird interconnections and famous people from back then. And they talk about the other big difference in the game was the talent level. Like, Yale had all of these really great athletic people, and Harvard was all of these just walk-ons, these kids who got 4.0s and busted their ass in the middle of nowhere, Minnesota, get a Harvard scholarship and decide to walk on. So there was, like, no reason why Harvard should have been within, like, 30 points of Yale.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of talk about that.
Don't both those schools have, like, all the secret clubs?
Yeah, they do, but even the way those are organized couldn't be more different. And that's actually going to eventually get into my crazy theory of the episode.
Okay.
So the guy who writes the comic strip Doonesbury went to Yale, Jerry Trudeau. And Doonesbury, in part, is based on the football team of 1968 for Yale. And some of the characters kind of outgrew from that, which I didn't know until I watched the documentary. I'm not a big Doonesbury comic book strip fan, but
yeah,
most people have heard of it.
It's political.
Yeah. So there's just all of these, like, weird interconnections. I'm like, I think I was telling you when we did the one sports book, the perfect game one, the baseball
mm-hmm.
one, and how I was relaying how there was all these interconnections that felt like Lost, Flight 815, how all these weird interconnections that you don't see on the surface. This is kind of similar in that respect, just the number of famous people. And
so the score was 29-29?
Right. Well, Harvard had Yale had a really big lead. They were winning 29-13 with about a minute left, and Harvard comes back and ties the game. This is before, like, overtime and all the rules that are in college football now. They scored a really late touchdown, got an onside kick, and were able to score on the last play of the game.
Nice.
And just the events that led up to that, they touch on that a little bit, but it's crazy. I mean, they had no business winning that game or tying the game or even being anywhere within. It's just fate was on their side. And it was not on Yale's. But I would recommend this to anybody who's not even really interested in football, because it really talks a lot about Vietnam and 60s culture. and things of that nature. So if you have any even like a passing interest in that kind of stuff, Tommy Lee Jones, when they interview him, he's so funny because he does his whole dry wit and he has this really serious look, and they'll ask him for funny stories about Al Gore. And he talked about this one story where Al Gore, this shows how long ago, they were saying like the year, like their sophomore year, I guess, Harvard converted all the phones on campus from rotary phones to touch tone.
Nice.
And Al Gore, I guess, was famous. He would make songs on touch tone phones. And he figured out how to play Dixie on a phone. So imagine Tommy Lee Jones telling us this story. Nice. And he like extends it for like 5 minutes and he really draws it out. And it's funny because he just has this really serious deadpan look on his face the entire time. So that's the documentary in a nutshell. But it talks about my crazy theory, which is rivalries.
Okay.
Harvard and Yale. And I can relate it to you guys because I know you guys aren't the biggest sports fans. But I have a crazy theory that I think rivalries such as Harvard and Yale, if you're a part of those, well, first of all, you need to be part of a classic rivalry. It doesn't have to be sports rivalry, but you have to be part of a rivalry because it tends to bring out the best in you. You're going to talk about Batman in a little bit in video games, right?
Mm-hmm.
Batman would not be who he is if he didn't have Joker. Superman would not be who he is if he didn't have Lex Luthor. Harvard would not be who they are if they didn't have Yale. The Yankees wouldn't be who they are if they don't have the Red Sox.
See, I get that.
Right.
But the sports rivalries...
The USSR would not be who they were in the 80s if they didn't have the USA. You have to have somebody who pushes you to accomplish...
I don't think they're doing so well, so...
Let's go with this way.
Okay.
The USA would not have been what they were without the Soviet Union.
Right. Especially in the 60s. Especially in the 60s. That rivalry...
We
got the space and landed on the moon. Without that rivalry, there would have never been that kind of a space program.
I agree. I just think people with the whole sports thing...
Right.
...go nuts. Especially in other countries. They're retarded bad about it.
Rword.com. Keep going.
they're really bad about it in other countries, like stabbing other people, like soccer hooligans and all that stuff.
A rivalry, any kind of rivalry, can get to a point where it gets bitter and gets sour or even unhealthy.
Okay, but I guess my thing is, I agree to a point, except for when it gets unhealthy quickly. Because if I would be willing to shout at, say, a Yankees fan because I'm a...
Red Sox fan? Yeah.
That's stupid.
Well, shout, what do you mean? Like, get into a physical altercation?
Like, not a physical one, but I mean like a shouting match with them? Like, about who's better? I mean, how old am I?
I guess.
That's like little kids arguing about who's better between, like, Superman and Batman. I mean, if you have a serious argument about it...
Yeah, I guess the way I'm defining it is different than that.
Okay.
In the sense that a rivalry helps you figure out more about you, that if you didn't have that counterpart, you would be, you know, the sum of you wouldn't add up to what it does.
Right.
Like every good piece of literature, every good piece of drama, whether it's a book, a comic book, a movie, a TV show, would Buffy have been, you know, we talked about Buffy earlier, would Buffy have been the person she was if she didn't go through all the stuff with Angel, or if she didn't have all the rivalries she had? Fight Faith, for example. You know, Faith was a rivalry, a short-lived one.
Yeah.
But my theory is that you need rivalries. And that as long as that maybe if you can keep it on the side of healthy, it does show you some things that you otherwise wouldn't know about yourself.
Yes.
Because Batman and Joker is a classic good example of a rivalry. You let me
I see your point
about
that. Like, because, okay, for example, the Harvard and Yale... One's going to try to outdo the other constantly, so they're being pushed to the best that they can because they're going to try to outdo the other one.
Right.
I guess what I'm at is like what you said. You have to stay on this side of healthy, otherwise...
Well, for sports, yeah.
Especially for sports.
Yeah.
You know, but I guess...
You could apply that to also politics and religion. I kind of throw those three in.
There's probably people out there that would be willing to punch somebody saying Captain Kirk is better than Captain Picard.
Right.
You know? There's people out there that take unhealthy, you know, rivalries
Pepsi versus Coke.
Exactly.
You can do all
that. I've always been a Pepsi guy. I've told you, but I would never hit somebody over it, you know?
Well, the whole, like you said, the whole Kirk versus Picard thing is one thing, but once you get into, like, Star Wars versus Star Trek, oh, yeah, there's, I'm sure there's been a couple of broken bottle fights over that
one. You can't. But I guess my theory is just about rivalries in general, and that sometimes I think people do think, sometimes I think the word rivalry somewhat has a negative connotation, and it doesn't necessarily mean that it's bad. Like, I think it's healthy to have rivalries.
Well, like the Lakers and the Celtics.
Right, that's another good one.
Yeah. No, I do agree with you. I as long as it stays healthy, then I think you are 100% correct.
You've been agreeing with some of my crazy theories recently.
I have to define them, and then I agree with them. See, that's, I don't know if you've noticed that, but I have to, like,
put a leash on it.
Do we have a rivalry?
I don't think so.
No? No?
I mean, what would we really compete about?
I don't know.
I'm better looking?
No, that's not really true.
Got a wife?
Oh, that's...
So we're not going to compete over women. I'm better at games than you?
Not really.
Racing games?
All of these are untrue.
Except for sports games. You can beat me in sports games. So... I mean, I don't see the competition. Maybe you should start a rivalry with me to get better.
Well,
I do have a voice like an announcer, I've been told recently by someone close to you.
That part is true.
Maybe you should start a rivalry with me. You don't even have to tell me about it.
Maybe.
I'd prefer, actually, if you didn't.
Fair enough.
So we should take a break.
We should take a break.
We're already at, like, 50.
Well, we got to edit. Who knows? And music. Long, right? Yeah. So, Harvard beats Yale 29-29.
Right.
And one thing before I wrap up, we'll get to the break, is that I think this is a really good, accurate title, because you should have seen at the end, like, the Harvard guys were, like, jumping up and down. Like, if you saw it in context, like, Harvard people really feel like they won the game, even though the game's tied.
Sure.
And Yale people really feel like they lost the game, even though it's tied. And you could have that in other types of media.
Sure.
Where, you know, everything, all things are...
I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
There was that one World Series where it was like the Diamondbacks or somebody.
Yeah.
Whereas like they've only been a team for like 2 years and it's like they win the World Series and everybody's like,
yeah.
What? Are you serious? They've been a team for 5 minutes. Why are they winning the World Series?
So, but yeah, I think it talks about 60s culture, and I think it also does a good job about talking about the nature of rivalries, which I know you're going to actually talk about in a little bit because your game touches on.
You got it streaming on
Netflix. Yes, I did.
So you should tell people that, because then...
I got it streaming on Netflix.
Then they could maybe just stream it instead of trying to find it at the video store.
I would probably bet, actually, that this is hard to find, like, a physical copy of.
Yeah.
Even at a rental store. So, yeah, I just found it via Netflix and streamed it and enjoyed every second of it. And it's relatively a short documentary, too. It's not like... I mean, it's a feature-length documentary, but it was, like, barely an hour and a half, if that.
Well, so, probably around 80 minutes is usually the cutoff for feature-length. Well, good deal.
All right, so
we're going to take a little break.
And we'll come back with comics and video games.
Yes.
Hanukkah is the festival of lights. Instead of one day of presents, we get eight crazy lights. But when you feel like the only kid in town without a Christmas tree, here's a list of people who are Jewish, just like you.
Hi guys, welcome back to Inject Some Culture. And we're going to talk about comics and video games. Do you know what I thought about?
What did you think about?
We should tell people we've only been talking for like 15 minutes or 20 minutes and totally confuse them, because then they'll be like, oh, okay, it's only been 20 minutes. Seems longer, but...
It's only been 15 minutes today.
It's only been like 20 minutes, so
they
should listen to the rest of it.
Yeah. We can get talking.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Let's go.
So you want me to go first, I hear.
Yes.
So I'm going to talk about Planet Hulk. Featuring the Incredible Hulk.
Makes sense.
Right.
For the title. It's put out by Marvel.
Yes.
If anybody's lived...
He's big and green.
In a cave.
Right. Well, Planet Hulk was released back, 2006, 2007? I want to say...
It should say it should on there, originally in magazine form.
It was issues 92 to 105. I want to say this was 2-3 years ago, because World War Hawk has been 2 years.
Yeah, that was their two... Because they had... World War Hulk happened after the Civil War, but before the invasion.
I really enjoy, actually, World War Hulk, too, but I think Planet Hulk did a great job at reigniting the character. I think that's safe to say.
In a way.
Before then, I mean, a lot of people like Hulk. Everybody's familiar with it. You know, the 70s TV show up until modern day.
Yeah, he's rough because he's like a force of nature. It's hard to keep having new stories with him on Earth because...
How do you challenge...
Right, I mean, like...
Superman has that
Superman's
problem.
Superman's different, though. He's not like a force... He's kind of like a force of nature, but he's a person, where the Hulk sometimes is more like a force of nature, where it's like, who knows what he's going to do? He could destroy an entire city.
So, speaking of which, the basic concept for the story, without going too much into the specifics, is the Heroes of Earth, which was that... Whatever... Don't they have a name?
The Illuminati.
Yeah,
that... They never called themselves that, but... They were, yeah.
Which is what? Reed Richards, Doc Strange.
Namor, Black Bolt, Iron Man, Professor X.
So all the really smart, powerful people.
Well, and to be clear, only three of them chose to send him into space.
Right. They Professor basically kind of lead him, they trap him, kind of lead him into it.
No, they set up a whole thing, which elaborate, is the part before this, which I actually have the part before. They do this, yeah. He was hiding out in Canada, ended up becoming the Hulk while he was out there, and they're like, okay, we need to get rid of him.
So they think they're doing the right thing. They think they're helping out him and Earth.
Yeah.
So we'll send them to a planet which they think is...
Well, it's plot of course with this ship that they trick him onto.
Right.
To go to this planet where there's no... intelligent life.
That was the idea.
There's plenty of vegetation and game.
So they basically, they
send
weren't going
to... a tropical paradise.
Yeah, because they didn't want to sentence him to death.
Right.
So they figured this was the compromise.
It was Reed Richards, Iron Man...
When Iron Man became a douchebag.
Black Bolt. And I think Doctor Strange was kind of okay with it. Namor was like, this is a bad idea. He comes back, he's going to whoop your ass.
Of course he's coming back.
Yeah, he's like, if he figures this out, you guys are dead.
Needless to say, something in transit goes wrong.
He smashed the side of the ship, which didn't help, and there was actually this planet, Sakaar, has
a
gravity well that pulls things into the planet.
And then hijinks and adventure ensue.
There's an easy way to explain this.
Gladiator.
Take Gladiator, the movie with Russell Crowe, and inject the Hulk into it.
Right.
There you go. And other aliens instead of people. You've got
Planet Hulk.
Yeah.
In a nutshell.
In a nutshell.
Oh, help me, I'm in a nutshell. Glass case of emotion.
So, but it's... The art's really good.
It is. It was written by Greg Pak, is the writer. You might have to help me with the artist.
Let's see.
Carlo Pagulian.
Well, he wrote the first story part, Exile.
With it was Michael a team effort, Avon by the looks Bowman, of it.
Alex Nino and Marshall Rogers. Then Aaron Lopresti
took over for a while.
Carlo Paglian.
Gary Frank filled in. Carlo, so, blah, blah, blah. Team effort.
Yeah, a bunch of people worked on it.
But I really enjoyed it. And
The Hulk, when creatures go through this gravity well, their power is reduced.
Right.
So Hulk lands on the planet. He's not...
I mean, he gets hurt like in his first 5 seconds
He's not the Incredible Hulk as you know him. He's
just a really strong...
Yeah, and he's not... You know, you can tell he's getting hurt, he's not as strong as he was, but as he's on the planet, he gets stronger and stronger. Silver Surfer ended up going through the same one, and he lost a lot of his powers for a time. There's the Red King, who's like the dictator of the whole planet, has these gladiatory games, ends up sticking the Hulk in there, he meets some people, some aliens.
So, and then eventually Hulk gets like a kind of a team
together. Called the Warbound.
Yeah.
And he actually gets a girlfriend.
He does.
Falls in love.
That's nice.
It is.
Sweet. Aw.
And
You know, it's got a lot of good stories to it. But really, when I was reading it, like, I read through it pretty quick because it was like, you know, page turning, you want to see what's going to happen. I was really like, yeah, this is Gladiator. This is Hulk in Gladiator.
And they kept him there for a while, especially in comic book time.
Yeah, it was pretty much a year.
Yeah. And then, of course, he, needless to say, he eventually leaves.
By the end of this, he finds a ship.
Right.
And then they use that ship, him and the...
Him and Warbound go back, and he's pretty pissed off, and gets his revenge in World War Hulk to various degrees of success.
Unfortunately, that was another one of those big, long, cool, built-up storylines that had a lame ending. But, and I really didn't like the main books of World War Hulk. I really didn't like that art style. It reminded me of Frank Miller's art, and I don't like that.
They had that shoot-off series, Frontline.
That was for Civil War.
Well, they did a Frontline for Hulk, too.
Oh.
Which was like the newspaper view of it, journalism view of the events.
And I those couldn't were read those because they just seemed like they were too boring.
There's very little action. Mm-hmm. That I would agree with you, but it was just interesting to see like a no-name civilians view of when things go bad and Hulk tears up Manhattan. So, but yeah, if you haven't read this and you're a fan of, you know, basic superhero genre, as Nate crumples up a piece of paper.
Yeah. One thing is he's intelligent Hulk.
Right.
He's not Bruce Banner at all. He's actually Hulk. He's got brains to him. And that's really important in this story because there's some parts where it's Bruce Banner's trying to take back over and the Hulk is just too strong for him to do it.
Yeah, I mean, Bruce Banner wouldn't have lasted 5 seconds on that world.
No, there's actually, I have a what if about our planet Hulk, and one of them, it's just like a 2-page little like cartoony drawn thing where it's like, what if Bruce Banner had landed on planet Hulk and he dies in like the first 3 seconds or something.
That seems pretty accurate as to what would have happened.
And then it ends up showing like all the Avengers and people showing up to try to find him because they're like, well, what if we realized he came on this planet and they find his skeleton. You know, it was like, kind of funny.
Oops.
Yeah. Oops. Our bad. There's actually one of the stories in that, too, is what if he landed on the correct planet?
Ah. And you know what? I think I might actually have what you're talking about that
one. And the other one's what if... Well, I'd be giving away the story.
But don't they talk about when he comes back? Wasn't there some what ifs, too? Or was that World War Hulk?
Well, no. This is the part that I can't say without giving it away.
Fair enough.
Is part of the what if, and it does lead to World War, like a World War Hulk thing. But yeah, it's a good read though. You've got the hard cover.
I have the hardbound cover. Yep.
Spent the extra $10.
I did. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I like the Hulk. He's pretty awesome. I'm wearing a Hulk T-shirt today.
You are. That's what kind of made me think about doing this one today. Yeah, so what do you have in the world of comics?
I have Fables. 1001 Nights of Snowfall, which is put out by Vertigo, owned by DC. Vertigo's like their more adult-oriented comics.
Isn't this the second thing you've had from them?
From Vertigo?
Yeah.
I don't believe so.
I thought you had something else.
I don't believe so. I think you're wrong.
Okay. I'm wrong.
Okay. So, Fables, as some of you may know, is a ongoing storyline where all our Fables... Well, not all of them, but a lot of our Fable characters have come into the real world. They've become regular people. They live in this town called Fable Town in New York. And just living their lives in the sanctuary world, as they call it in this. What this story is kind of a standalone story. It's written by Bill Willingham, with illustrations by Asayo Andrews, Brian Boland, John Bolton, Mark Buckingham, James Jean, Michael... W.M. Kaluta, Derek Kirk Kim, Tara McPherson, Jill Thompson, Charles Vess, Mark Wheatley. There's a lot of different stories in this. But it's very much Snow White goes to a sultan, and it turns into 1001 Arabian Nights. She starts telling stories about her world to keep herself from being decapitated in the morning. So it's very cool. It's got the history of the Big Bad Wolf and how he became the Big Bad Wolf. Which is a really cool little story. There's a story in it called The Fencing Lessons, which I believe is Snow White, but they don't ever say that it's actually her, or it might be her sister. You're not sure, but she ends up killing the seven dwarves.
This might be a stupid question. How do they figure out, more of a logistical question, like, what is, like, free game for them, licensing-wise?
Well, I'd say since the Brothers Grimm wrote most of the fables that we have...
But isn't Snow White...
What, owned by Disney? No. That their, movie is.
Yeah, their version of Snow White, that character.
But the character themselves, since they're free for everybody, I mean, they're like 200 years old.
Okay, so I mean, anything that's public domain?
Yeah, oh yeah. Her sister's Briar Rose, too, I believe, which is another one of those Cinderella slash Snow White.
So most of this tales. Is most of the stuff from Brothers Grimm?
The vast majority kind of is, but there's... I don't know, there's one of the stories that I haven't finished all the stories in it yet, but it's very much when it's talking about the Sultan and her, it's very much like a book. There's just like one or two pictures. And then when she's telling a story, it's like a comic book. And sometimes she'll tell three of them because they're short on a night. But there's one where it's very much like, is going to tell the story of Hansel and Gretel, Briar Rose and Snow White go to... this cottage, and it's made of gingerbread, and they kind of tell them their story, but then it ends up they find the witch, and she's still alive inside the oven, just she's like a skeleton, and she starts to regenerate, and it ends up she tells her story about how she became this witch who tried to eat two little kids, and that's what it's Hansel and Gretel, but that's not a Brothers Grimm story, that's a Hans Christian Andersen.
That's his story.
But all that stuff's public domain because it's, you know, Little Red Riding Hood and things like that. All that stuff is public domain. Which they do talk about Little Red Riding Hood in here too because of the Big Bad Wolf story. His story is pretty cool because his father is the North Wind and he decided to become a wolf because he saw this beautiful wolf that was all white.
Oh, yeah.
And the wolf's name was Winter.
Right.
So he ended up, spent time as a wolf for 2 years, and then was like, okay, well, I'm done. See you later.
I've been a wolf, been there, done that.
Yeah. And leaves her, and she has seven pups. And they all grow really big and strong because they're part supernatural creature, except for one who's this little runt they named Bigby. And the six other brothers who are mean to him and stuff all the time, go off to find their father, the North Wind. He's like, well, forget that. And he tries to keep his mom from being, because she dies of a broken heart. He tries to keep her from being eaten by vultures, but he's too little. So he makes a vow that everything he kills, the next thing will be bigger. So he starts out, he kills like crickets and grasshoppers, moves up to like mice, and then field rats. And eventually, and each time he does it, he's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And eventually he is killing men, and then later he gets to the point where he's killing entire armies by himself. He's so huge by this point. But it shows him that he got some powers from his father, like the huffing and puffing and blowing the house down.
That's cool.
It shows, you know, that kind of thing. But he goes and tries to kill his father a couple times, and he tries seven times and fails. But she tells the story to the Sultan to show that people can change, because now in the fable town, the big bad wolf, who's in a human form now, is like their protector. He's a really good guy. He's their good guy, their hero.
Hmm.
So that's why she tells him that story.
It sounds intriguing.
And the art's really cool. It's very different. There's all the stories have different art. There's lots of talk about dwarves and goblins. There's this whole story about these animals. And there's a really neat one with the Frog Prince. It's like a different version of the Frog Prince. It's really sad, but good. See, there's the big wolf, bad wolf.
I just saw the scrawny little one on the
previous page. He's
so cute.
Yeah, he's got a huge head. Looks like Flash.
He does kind of look like Flash.
But the art's really neat in here. You know, it's all very different.
We got a lot of different artists.
So it's nice. It's a good change because you could actually... What's good about books like this is you could find one where you're like, man, I really like that art. And then you try to find out what else they've done, and it could be something you really enjoy. So,
I've always heard good things about that book, and I know they have a spinoff, The Jack of Fables.
Yeah.
And Vertigo, as a company, some of the things they produce, like I was reading.
Hellblazer is a great example. Swamp Thing.
I was reading about a year ago. I was reading that horror anthology series, House of Mystery.
I love House of Mystery.
That's really good too.
Yeah, Cain and Abel. Yeah. I've got one that's got a bunch of stories. It's really good because I like all those old, you know, Tales from the Crypt kind of comic book stories. They did a good job. But yeah, so Fables 1001 Nights of Snowfall is really good. I'm actually going to, because of this, I'm going to try to find, you know, the beginnings of the Fable.
Do it.
Things in trade paperback and try to...
I think I might have to look into picking some of that up. It sounds really good. And the theory, the underlining principle.
I was thinking the other day, like, how good of an idea that is.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's...
Taking something...
It's something so simple, but it's like this guy, Bill Willingham, is the guy that started the whole Fable series. It's like... He was the guy that said, yeah, this is a good idea. Let's do it.
It's just a modern retelling.
Yeah, pretty much. So, but that's comic books.
Okay.
Another news, just so everybody knows, Disney bought Marvel. So who knows where that's going to go. My Mickey Mouse might have schnickety schnick claws.
That'll be Goofy.
No, Goofy, I see him more as a Colossus.
Oh, really?
Because he's clumsy. He needs the metal skin.
Okay, there I can see that.
No, it would be Donald Duck would be schnickety schnick because he's got the
power. True. Yeah.
So Mickey would be Cyclops.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wouldn't Mickey actually probably be Spider-Man?
Oh, that's possible. Or Captain America. But I was kind of just going with an X-Men theme there.
Ah, gotcha.
So.
Huh.
Goofy would make a funny Iron Man.
Maybe they'll have a... Disney likes teaming up with other people. Maybe there'll be like a Disney Marvel video game.
Yes. There'll be versus. Yeah.
Who knows?
Goofy would kick ass in that.
Sorry, didn't mean to. Dude, one of the only games that has Disney stuff in it is one of my favorite games, though. Kingdom Hearts is great.
Well, speaking of video games, segue.
Nice. So, and comic books.
And comic books.
Brings us to my video game.
I think you should go first.
I'm gonna.
Okay.
So, I'm gonna make my claim right here. I said it to you earlier, but game of the year.
So, you're saying September, October, the remainder of September, all of October, November, December, games need not apply.
Right. They might as well just wait until January.
Wait until January 2nd,
yep.
Since nobody works on the 1st.
Right.
Wait until the 2nd. Come out with your games then.
Yes.
Wow, that's a mighty bold claim.
And the game I'm talking about is Batman Arkham Asylum. Game of the year. There will be a game of the year edition of Batman Arkham Asylum. Guaranteed.
Really?
Guaranteed.
Really?
It's going to be...
There's a couple of games...
I would be shocked if it's not game of the year. It would honestly... Like, usually I wouldn't be too surprised, but it would surprise me if this game is not game of the year. It's awesome.
Good thing it didn't come out last year.
What would it be up against last
Fallout 3?
Oh, yeah. That would be tough.
Because that's what won.
Yeah. It deserved it.
Right.
Absolutely. Well, and one good thing about Batman and Arkham Asylum, it could be game of the year for both systems.
Okay.
Sony and... Because it's on both.
Okay.
And the Sony one actually has the extra level, exclusive level right now, where you get to play as the Joker.
Well, tell us about Arkham Asylum.
Well, its developer was Rocksteady, and... Also put out by Eidos Games, which is famous for putting out such things as Tomb Raider.
Among other things.
Especially back in the day. Their PS1 days, they were like kings.
Eidos was really big, yep.
It was written by Paul Dini, who a lot of people that know about DC Comics, he's the chief editor, I believe, for comics. He's also written Batman stories. Especially recently, I think he's still writing.
And he's done TV work.
Yeah, he did a lot of the cartoon stuff too. But
he worked on Heroes for a little bit and Lost.
Yeah,
he was a story editor for them.
The big thing is, I believe he's now a chief editor. He might just be a writer again. I'm not 100% on that. But it brings back the voice talent of Kevin Conroy for Batman, who did it for animated series. Mark Hamill does the Joker, just like animated series, and Arlene Sorkin does Harley Quinn, amongst other people that are all back from the animated series. There's a new guy doing Scarecrow. He's one of those voices where it's like, you know, you've heard his voice like 100 times before. Same thing with one of the doctors. and a couple other people, you're like, oh yeah, I know their voices. I've heard it in every game I play. But the game starts out, you're bringing, you're Batman, you're bringing Joker back to Arkham Asylum. He broke out not that long ago, and you're bringing him back. They put him in a straitjacket, and you take him down to the depths. As soon as they take him out of your hands, he gets free.
Of course he does.
Of course he does. And just from that point on, it's like this awesome roller coaster ride of awesomeness.
Wow.
There's some stealth to it. There's like the combo fighting part to it, kind of like Assassin's Creed-esque.
Right.
But looks better because you're not doing the same moves over and over again. You can fight, and I actually fought 20 guys at one time in this one part. Fought 20 guys. And it was like, you know, you're punching this guy, you're doing a backflip to kick this guy.
I saw you playing this maybe about a week ago, and that was one of the first things I think I commented on. Yeah. It was like, this makes you feel like you're Batman. Like, you feel like you're a badass.
Oh, yeah. And you get the grappling hook. You can grab, you know, ledges and stuff and pull yourself up. You can go down with your cape spread out so you glide. You get batarangs and a bat claw, which is like a hook for grabbing people or things. You sneak around on the whole... You're stuck on the island of Arkham Island, and there's a lot of buildings to it. One of the best things I can say for people is when you play a game and it's like 6 hours long, you feel cheated. One, you paid $60.
Right.
Two, you've been like building this game up in your head for, you know, months sometimes. Then you play it and you're like, I'm done already. I sat down and played it 3 times. I'm done. Or some people once or twice. This game, I was like, man, I must be close to the end. So I stopped for the night or whatever. And it was like, you're 25% through the game. I'm like, whoa, okay. Start playing again, and I'm like, man, that's really far. Go back, it's like 40% through the game now. It lasted a good long time. Now, I can see if somebody went straight through and just tried to finish the story quickly, especially on an easy difficulty, they could. They probably could finish it very quickly. But there's a lot to the story. There's these really cool scarecrow levels where you're totally tripping out and you see these weird things. Tom saw one of them.
Yeah, I was over at his house when he was playing. There's some neat stuff in there.
You go walking down this hallway, and like all of a sudden the hallway, it starts raining in the hallway.
Okay.
And you keep going down, and it starts looking more like an alleyway than a hallway. And you start hearing your mom and dad's voice when they're leaving the Mask of Zorro. And then you turn into a little kid at one point, little Bruce. You see their bodies there at the end of the hall.
That's cool.
And then there's these other parts where it's very different playing style, where Scarecrow's like 60 feet tall, and you have to sneak around to get up to a point where you can shine a light on him. And it's really interesting because like the lightning will flash, and you'll turn into Scarecrow for a second, and then back into Batman.
Huh.
The weapons are great. You have it's a level, kind of a leveling game. You get experience for the way you fight people and what you do when you unlock some of the Riddler mysteries, which are awesome, by the way, too. Riddler, like, chimes in partway through the game, and you have these different riddles you have to figure out, and you just kind of take a... It's kind of like taking a picture.
Mm-hmm.
And I found all of them. I've as of last night, I found every single hidden thing that's the Riddler stuff, which was kind of fun, and it became like... I had this purpose, you know, I was going to find all these things. And he kind of taunts you while you're doing that.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of that. Yeah.
But the other thing is there's detective mode, which helps for sneaking around. When you go into detective mode, you can see where there's places you can hide, things you can grapple to.
That mechanic's becoming more and more popular. Some people call it predator vision.
Yeah, it's kind of like that, where you can see through everything and see the assailants. Who's got guns?
The new Wolfenstein game has it, which I actually heard is surprisingly good.
Yeah.
But it has this whole thing of the veil, and it gives like this blue filter to the screen, and then you'll see people who look up human in the normal vision, but it'll look demonic in that, and it'll let you find things. It's kind of like their detective vision.
Yeah.
That whole thing's becoming more and more popular.
The cool thing is when you first switch over to it and there's bad guys, it'll tell you how many, if they're unarmed or armed. You can And you could play for a while in detective mode, and like you do sometimes, and then like, you like forget that you're in detective mode, and you like click it out, you're like, oh yeah, there's colors to things. Because I started, like, one time I was playing, I started thinking, I'm like, man, this game really doesn't look as good as I thought when I first started playing. Then I like, oh yeah, I'm in detective mode, and I clicked it off. It's like, oh yeah, it's beautiful. That's another thing. The game looks great. As you go through the game, Batman's costume even gets like torn up and ripped. There's really great cutscenes in it. It's really, there's, I can't say enough great things about it. There's a challenge mode where you can go through and try to see how many guys or how many points you can get fighting guys, which is kind of like mercenaries mode, mm-hmm. which I really appreciate that. Mm-hmm. You get character bios. There's like 42 character bios. All these people that aren't even in the game, but you just kind of find out some story stuff. And for me personally, there's a lot of things talking about the Batman universe. Like, there's a two different Arkham Asylum stories. One was just a graphic novel by itself, and the other one was a miniseries called Living Hell. And there's a lot of things from both of those within this story. They did their homework when they did this, and I really appreciated that. So it's...
That was the one thing, though, when sitting there watching, you know, Nate play. Oh, this is from this story. And I was expecting, you know, page 32, scene one.
But it's, like I said, I know it's partially because I'm such a big
Batman fan. I was going to ask you, as devil's advocate, how much of this is the fact that you live on Bruce Lane, and how much of it... I can edit that out.
Stalkers.
And how much of it is that it's the newest thing in your head?
I know it's not because it's the newest thing in my head, but it's just, it's one of those things where you get excited about something because it's done well. Like, when I first played Fallout, that's how I felt about Fallout. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't have mattered if I still feel like that about Fallout.
Right.
It's so exciting. This is the same way. Like, I can see myself a year from now still telling people, like, you haven't played Batman Arkham Asylum? You're an idiot. Go play it right now. And if they're like, well, I've only seen Batman, you know, Begins in Dark Knight. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Go play it.
It's a great game.
It's awesome.
And it's about Batman.
Yeah, and part of it is because I really like Batman. I like the Joker.
Right.
But it's just such a good game. It was very well done.
I'm glad that
it didn't
not all
rushed.
Comic book games can say that, so that's...
Yeah, this is the best comic book game I've ever played.
Wow. That's a strong statement.
The best. Okay. And I think part of it is because it's not based on a movie. It's its own thing.
It's based on a concept.
Yeah, it's based on a concept.
Like I said, it has stuff from, and more obscure stuff, I assume,
oh, yeah.
from the comic books
it would have been
part of this game.
Oh, yeah.
It would have been easy when they probably started the development cycle for that game 18 months ago.
Oh, at least.
It would have been easy for them to just make a Dark Knight game.
Well, see, they were making a Dark Knight game that just never came out because they missed their release date for when it was in theaters, and then they're like, well, we'll put it out when it goes on DVD, and they just never did.
Right.
But when I heard about this, I was like, that's probably going to be horrible, because I've played the other Batman games, like the one that was on Xbox, Dark Tomorrow. One of the worst
I remember
video,
that.
You know, comic book video games ever.
There was another one on the PS2, like when the PS2 was first released.
Well, that was a good one. That was the animated series one.
Yeah.
Batman Vengeance. That was pretty cool because it was based on the animated series. But there's so many things. There's a lot of things, the riddles, that most people won't get unless you read comic books or know about the DC Universe some. Like, there's a thing where it's like this, a strange, in capital letters, transfer took place here. Well, right away I was like, oh, that's Hugo Strange. He's a Batman bad guy. Most people wouldn't be able to pick up on that.
I have no idea who that
but
is.
But even if you don't, you can find the Riddler trophies and things mapped somewhere in the level.
Right.
And it'll let you know where all the stuff is. You'd still have to figure out what thing to take the picture of, I say with quotes. But you could still find it even if you didn't know. But it would be it's easier if you do.
So. Gotcha.
But I'm... Like I said,
I saw you play this for maybe a good hour, and I liked what I saw, so I can see why you give it a high recommendation.
Yes. Game of the year. That's you heard it here first.
That's a mighty big... Because we'll probably have a year-end podcast where we talk about our favorite things of 09.
Yeah, Batman Arkham Asylum will be the thing I'm talking about.
Wow.
Guaranteed. There would have to be something super awesome come out between now and then, or one of the things I haven't played yet that just blows me away, but I can't see it happening. Because I'm going to judge other games by this game.
Wow.
Yeah.
You heard it here.
Yep.
Video game developers, like, you have your work cut out for you.
It's going to be hard to play, like, finish Assassin's Creed since they never finished it.
Yeah.
It'll be hard to finish that now after
playing
this.
Maybe you should
just
wait for the sequel that comes out in 2 months. I've heard that the combat was kind of fluid and organic and rhythmic.
Yeah.
It's probably the best way to say it.
It is. Like, you get frustrated, though, when you get punched because you're like, man, I'm better than this. I'm Batman. You know what I said about Ghostbusters, where I said you felt like you were a Ghostbuster?
Right, I remember that.
You feel like you're Batman when playing this
game. Oh, yeah, I got that sense real quick.
That's the coolest thing, is it's just like what I liked about Ghostbusters, which I would have said for me, I know it wouldn't be a game of the year, just because not as many people are into it.
Most enjoyable game you played?
But that was one of the most enjoyable games I played. This takes the cake on it. Because it's even a better game overall, but it did the same thing. It made me feel like I was Batman for the, I don't know, like 12 hours or more that I played.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Go get it.
I'm passionate about this.
You are.
That's the sign of something awesome.
That you're injecting them with some culture.
I hope so.
You should be passionate
about it. I'd like to inject them with liquid form of Batman Arkham Asylum. That's what I'd like to inject them with.
Sweet.
Okay.
Okay.
You can have your turn now.
Oh, thanks, buddy.
Yeah, no problem. Of course, I might interrupt with more Batman stuff.
You might. Well, the game
No, I'm sorry.
So, I'm playing a few other things. One game I'm almost ready to talk about, but I think I'm going to wait one more episode. I just need to play more of it and get my head around it. Because it's really, it's not Batman. It's not, no. Although you do wear a cape.
Robin.
No, it's not Robin either.
Robin, hospital adventure.
No. So I kind of went back in time. Gotta go back in time. I only went back in time like 9 months.
Oh.
But I've been playing this game a lot recently because they have some new content for it. And it's just something I wanted to talk about because I think it really has an effect on this era of video games, which is Gears of War 2. I know we mentioned it briefly.
You're almost going to have another theory.
Kind of, yeah. But this is more of a issue, more of a topic of discussion. Kind of like how your comic book movies of the past, present, and future last episode. So Gears of War 2 came out last November. It's the sequel to Gears of War 1. The story by no means is Shakespeare, if you can even consider that a story. You basically just shoot aliens in the face, rinse, repeat.
Yeah, it's just that they like shoved story down.
What's our mission?
Throat.
It's mission. Our mission statement: be positive.
Batman Arkham Asylum, let me say, is the best game of the year.
Great story.
Well, we played through Gears of War 2 back in the spring co-op. We had a lot of fun. True.
We did, yeah.
We do.
We played like a level
almost
or an act
every
night for a while.
For about a week. And it's probably one of the better examples of how you do co-op right.
Yeah.
In this generation for
they
consoles.
They did that well with both Gears 1 and Gears 2.
And there's a lot of shooters out there from Halo 3 to Call of Duty 4. And the reason why I've been playing this lately is mainly for multiplayer reasons. I've gotten used to the whole third person over the shoulder perspective. I seem to do better. It seems to fit my playstyle a little bit better. They recently released the All Fronts collection, which had all the maps you could download. The newest set of maps released last month were just called Dark Corners.
Yes.
And as far as map and level design, I don't want to get too theoretical because I don't know how much you know about map level design or how much you even pay attention to that kind of stuff.
Well, I pay attention to how it looks.
Yeah. But you can just tell the levels are so much more interesting than like Gears 1 levels.
Yeah.
Like you can tell that, you know, over the course, Gears came out, what, maybe 3 years ago now?
Oh, yeah,
easy. Yeah, they've learned a lot in those 3 years. You can see the evolution of the maps. Every map pack seems to add something new without it being, you know, hokey, or they haven't jumped the shark with any kind of weird or silly mechanics. These maps I seem to have the most fun on, and they're balanced in a way where a lot of maps and a lot of map packs, it's just, you know, race the place X to find item Y or weapon Y, and whoever gets there first usually dominates the map. That seems to happen less frequently with some of these newer Gears maps. All of those two, you can play Horde mode, which I wanted to talk about really quick. It's one of my favorite parts of the game, which I think has led to a new thing in shooters, especially AAA shooters. For you to be a AAA successful shooter now, I feel like the feeling is you got to have a really strong single player, at least a co-op. Obviously, your multiplayer has to be good so you can get enough population so that people can find a game regardless of when they log on. Because basically, if you're not Gears, Halo, or Call of Duty at this point, your game really only has a community.
Oh, I was playing Need for Speed online, and it's like for like an hour or something, it was just me and some other dude racing.
Yeah, there's just nobody online. Everybody's in those handful of games. But they have Horde, which led to, so yeah, single player slash co-op, multiplayer, and then you have to have like some kind of a third mode, like a Horde mode, or Halo did the Forge kind of stuff, and now with ODST, they're going to do the firefight mode. Call of Duty has the zombie mode in World of War.
Left 4 Dead has the survival mode. Wrecking Crew
and Red Faction. You almost have to have, which is awesome, Red Faction is probably my game of the year candidate as of right now.
I still haven't played the actual game.
The single player is actually
really
fun.
They got a new one coming.
They have some new DLC. But I think Gears does all of those things really well. They may not do any of them spectacular, but they do them all above average. And that's why, you know, I think it's worthy to talk about and how it's really, I think, affected this entire era for shooters. Because a lot of people claim that the whole that firefight mode, if I can get the words out properly, in the new Halo is pretty much a direct rip off of Horde mode.
Right.
So they obviously, if it's...
But I guess it's fair, though, since everybody ripped off Halo's lobby system.
Right, to an extent, yeah. So
the one thing I do have to say about Gears, and it's weird, I like third-person games better.
Okay.
Except for when it comes to my online shooters.
You like...
For some reason, I don't know why I could not get into Gears Online. Like, playing it, I don't know if it's the third-person part of it, or if it's just...
That's the opposite, because that's why my two favorite shooters are this and Red Faction, and both of those are third-person.
Like, pretty much, I'm stuck on, if I'm playing online, I'm playing Halo 3,
right,
or Left 4 Dead, but I kind of gave up on Left 4 Dead, because it's not as much fun unless you got all the people in your group are from
you
our
know
friends.
Them. Yeah. And even then, somebody might lock you out.
Or leave you behind when you're dying.
Right, like, that's just really bad, so. But, yeah, I just wanted to briefly mention Gears, because that way I could fill the video game segment. I'm not doing it just to fill it. I do think it's worthy to talk about, because I do think it's going to have, you know, like, 10 years from now, people are going to be like, you remember the 360, and what were your favorite games? And it's usually, you know, 5 or 6 games always get mentioned whenever you have that discussion about any
Halo
era.
3,
yeah,
War.
Gears is, I think, is going to definitely be one of those games.
I understand the Halo thing, I guess, to a degree. I don't understand why people are all crazy about Halo all the time, because the story is just, it's okay.
Right.
But Gears, I don't get why people went so apeshit crazy about Gears of War. I've played through both Gears 1 and Gears 2, it did have a really nice co-op, and I think that's one of those things that shooters now, if they don't have a co-op, they're hurting themselves, because people really do enjoy to play. Like, the fact that you can play 4-player co-op on Halo 3, how many other games can you do that on?
Very little.
Yeah. But I just never got why people were so in love with Gears. It just boggles my mind.
I'm sure there's probably people who are like, why is Nate so in love with Batman? It boggles my mind.
I guess so. Me and Tom actually played all the way through.
Yeah, Gears.
Gears 1. Yeah.
Yeah, and the thing that I really liked about it was the whole the co-op thing. You really, in that game, you really depended on the other person to get.
Yeah.
Yeah, like especially the light, the level with the light.
With the light, yeah.
Where you had to.
I wish they would have actually had more of that. I mean, they break it up. They have a lot of those vehicle segments.
You know what they did, though, in this one was they just kind of kept splitting you up.
And it was artificially, like, sometimes.
Yeah, and it was like, okay, yeah. So I'm going this way and he's going that way.
But
why didn't we just go the same way?
So now we have our own private shooter game for 5 hours. Right. Then
you get back. But, you know, it's that game's at its best when you're in a room and you're, you know, it's almost like a mini horde mode where you have, like, you know, a dozen or so locusts and together you take them down. And as me and Tom were joking about earlier in the break, then they play that, you know, guitar riff at the end to let you know that mini area.
Yeah,
now you're done.
There's a speaker. We think that's a speaker on the cover.
Yeah, he's
now.
Got a boombox on his chest. I always said that
music before. Has to come from somewhere.
Yeah.
So
it's almost like Army of Two, where they put their guns up like guitars.
Right. So you know, that's almost breaking the fourth wall of gaming. You know, it's their little nod. Hey, we're not taking ourselves too seriously. Ultimately, you're doing this to have fun.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a nod to that.
Okay, so Arkham Asylum. Anyways, the Joker keeps popping up over the loudspeaker, being hilarious, and he's on the TV. Mm-hmm. The funny part at the end. Remember? Do you remember being in the visiting room and there was like the Joker body sitting there with a TV for a head?
Yeah.
And he was talking through it. Mm-hmm. At the end, he lifts off the TV as the Joker with his head inside of a TV. It was really funny. But as you go through the game, the visitor center part, you see like these thugs like working on it. And as the game progresses, you're like, you start realizing they're building a Joker face over the door so that you have to walk through his mouth. So it's kind of a neat thing. Oh, and by the way, Batman could totally beat the crap out of Marcus Fenix. Just throwing that out there.
Really? You did not just go to nerddom when you said
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, you went to nerddom.
It's okay.
Population U.
Yeah. No, there's so many more people like you two are involved
right.
in that town.
Somebody there. Listening to the podcast right now is be like, Marcus would totally fuck up Batman with a Lancer. Totally.
Yeah, anybody that says that's obviously mentally deficient.
Wow. But still listen to our podcast, please.
Yeah, to hear what I say next about you.
However, who's got the better sidekick?
Dom.
Batman?
Dom complained
Dom
about
cried.
About his wife. My wife died. Spoilers. Spoilers.
Who cares? They don't play the game for the story.
It's 9 months old.
True
he
enough.
Doesn't know.
Yeah, if you haven't so, played it yet, you ain't gonna.
So yeah, that brings up... Oh, that finishes Gears.
But yeah.
I think I have a really interesting game next time to talk about.
Okay. Who knows if I will? I might talk about Batman again.
Like, I played it again.
I was like, I went all the way through. It was great.
I can't believe I'm actually encouraging you to continue your Batman discussion. Does it lend itself to go back through and play for any reason other than I really, really love this game? Like, is there a second?
If you finished it and didn't get the riddles and things, I could definitely see it. I don't know if it really does, other than playing on a harder difficulty and seeing if you can make right. it through on that.
Almost every game now has whatever the hardest difficulty is. It doesn't unlock until you beat
this
it the first
time. This one
doesn't
have that.
Okay.
As far as I can tell. It does have where you can have multiple saves on one name, though, which is nice.
Yeah.
Because a lot of games don't do that. It's like, if you start over, you're
auto
starting
save,
over.
Yeah.
I don't know if I don't... Other than really enjoying it and wanting to see the story again and maybe trying to do better this time or, you know, possibly even get some achievements or something,
right.
you can do it. But when you finish the game, you can go around through all of Arkham Asylum at that point. So you can find all those hidden things. I really think, though, they'll have some downloadable content where they're going to put out another level or something. Because it really leaves itself open at the end easily for another story. And an easy one for being on the island again. But they could just as easily send you into... Like, as soon as Batman starts leaving, they mention Harvey Dent, Two-Face, is robbing a bank in Gotham. So he takes off in the Batwing.
That could be future DLC or something
or,
like that.
Or a whole nother game, yeah.
The popular DLC lately seems to be prequels. Because that's what Red Faction...
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing they'll have is that Joker level, which I think is a prequel
okay.
level, where he's going through Blackgate and releasing the prisoners or setting it on fire. Because that's on the PS3. But
right.
So that'll probably be the first thing that you'll be able to download.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, we're probably running a little long today, so we should probably...
Just get right into it?
Well, we can break real quick. And then we can come back with our ending and your zombie apocalypse tip of the episode.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Come back after this final break.
So much a man can tell me, so much he can say. You made my power, my pleasure, my pain.
Thanks for coming back. And before Nate gets to his zombie apocalypse tip of the episode and tells us how to survive.
Yes,
how to survive. Survive with his tip of survival. I don't even know where I'm going. I'm just looking at your notes. So there's some surviving and there's a tip involved. Let me give out the info before I get sidetracked.
If you're calling Mother Russia, you will send a Twitter to us.
At ISC Podcast. And if you're emailing us, you will send that to iscpodcast@gmail.com.
I love ISC Podcast. This is a wonderful time. You crazy cowboy American.
All right.
I think people in Russia are better equipped to survive a zombie apocalypse than us.
Except for it's really cold.
That's why I'm saying that they're better equipped.
It's possible.
Walking
Zombies
Dead.
Zombies will be slower.
Yeah. You know, the best parts of they feel the safest in Walking Dead is during winter months.
Which I really don't get because they're in Georgia, but it's snowing.
So it still gets cold down in the south.
It doesn't snow
for
in
like
Georgia.
2 weeks.
They close down the state when it snows in Georgia.
They see a snowflake. Everybody
goes
home.
It's shut down. So that's what I lean towards, that there was some kind of nuclear thing that happened.
Shenanigans.
That they don't mention because, or they forgot where they were when they were writing it. And they're like, oh, yeah, dude, did you realize they're in Atlanta, Georgia? There's
I'm starting to reread those because I recently got the other. I finally got the latest.
See, I should just take that off you right now.
I'm not totally done with it.
Yeah, but you haven't read that one.
But no, we're not doing that.
It's going to take you a while to get through all the other ones.
Maybe we'll talk about it after. But anyway, I'm rereading from the beginning, and I got to the part where they get to the prison.
Nice.
So
that's a really good one. That's the third book, right?
Yeah, they find the prison in the very last page of the second,
which is a great thing too.
And I just forgot, like, it had been so long since I had read the first couple of issues and the first couple of volumes. Like, I forgot about the crazy guy in the barn and who kept his family inside the barn.
Oh, yeah.
The farmer.
Because they bring him to the jail later.
Yeah, but I just kind of forgot some of that because it had been so long since
Well, he was hoping to cure them.
Because
I think his son was one of them. Because he had, like, 12 kids or something. I guess he's a farmer. Okay, so talking about zombies.
Go right ahead.
I have my zombie apocalypse tip of the episode, which is vehicles. Okay?
They can't see that.
Yeah, not at all. He's kind of steering. Dan's
or
kind
punching.
Of like, yeah, dancing or steering. I'm not sure. Anyway, my tip is the fact that there will be cars everywhere. And most of them will end up being useless after a certain point because gas will stop being delivered to gas stations. Gas stations will not be pumping out gas. You'll have to siphon gas off other vehicles. So, though you want something sturdy, like a truck, you know, you can put things in the back like people or whatever, and you can mow down zombies with it, you're also going to want something that's good on gas.
So what's a good compromise?
One is a scooter or motorcycle.
With chainsaws attached to the sides.
No, that's a little silly.
Oh, sorry.
Or an ATV. They're good on gas. You can go just about anywhere on the motorcycle or ATV, so you can get off the beaten track. Chances are the zombies aren't going to pull you off of it. It'd be easier to run them over with an ATV than a motorcycle. You might wreck. But you can go around them easier with a motorcycle or scooter. Like in The Walking Dead, they have the camper.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of gas, especially for not that far. Like, as far as you'd get on the gas, that's pretty rough. Though, the best vehicle of all vehicles for a zombie
tank
apocalypse, nope.
Way bad on gas.
Oh. Yeah.
And this will be bad on gas, too, but you only need it for a little area, is a combine.
True.
sometimes there was a combine parked less than 100 yards away from me.
Big chomping teeth that would just
totally
eat
get in that
and
combine.
Spit them. It wouldn't even spit them at you. It spit them out on top of it, away from you. Guts and gore.
Although I've never really driven a combine.
I could probably do it. I told you,
I'm just saying, there's sometimes right out here, there's a combine.
Believe me, in this area, we'll find a combine. We'll be good.
There's a place that sells it right up.
So, that wouldn't be great on gas or anything, but if you needed to clear a field
of zombies? Oh, yeah.
That's awesome. It's like a giant lawnmower.
Don't make them into nice little bundles.
Yeah. But vehicles are going to be a very important thing, because you might get stuck with horses and bicycles. It's very possible at a certain point.
Zombie horses.
Well, chances are animals won't be infected.
And can hope.
I don't want zombie horses or zombie wolves. That makes things deadlier.
Zombie deer?
Yeah, zombie we've already deer. Got zombie
I
deer.
Want a couple of those just to give to you.
I kind
of
want some zombie deer to get some aggression out.
Yeah. But no, usually in the things, the animals are fine. But horses and bicycles, things like that, possibly even... You know, you have to go to some museum like the Smithsonian and get, like, the solar-powered car out of it or something. You'd be set with that.
Not here.
No, not here.
Australia? Awesome.
Yeah.
San Diego?
But it's possible it'd be a lot like the Road Warrior, where you're, like, driving some makeshift car looking for gas to fuel your vehicle.
Scooping it up in hubcaps.
Yep, any way you can get it. So it would be a good idea
to learn how to siphon gas
and drive a stick shift.
Oh, I don't know how to do either of those things well. I've driven a stick like twice.
I bet you could suck
the hose. I'm totally editing that out.
I bet you're good at it.
No.
I have all confidence in you.
I don't know. That's getting deleted.
And the other half playing with the shifter, grabbing that stick.
See, Tom said, you can't be mad at Tom. It's impossible. I think he could kill someone close to you, and you might still not be able to be mad at him.
It was Tom. Probably really didn't mean to do it.
Yeah, it was obviously an accident.
I was channeling Nate at the time.
Nate was a bad influence. I'm really mad at Nate.
Right. That's probably how it would go. Something like that.
Let me go get the combine across the street.
Yeah.
Go to.
But yeah, that's so within your plan. Get some vehicles. Get some dirt bikes. A golf cart would be okay, I guess, for moving around a large property. My dad has those mini trucks, which would be awesome for it because they're awesome on gas. They have beds like regular trucks, but they're tiny. And
the steering wheel's on the other side, so you can use your right hand to hack zombies off of you.
Or shoot out the window,
either way. Absolutely. Instead of trying to do it all left-handed and
putting
somebody's eye out that you didn't mean to.
Call it gangster style.
Possible. So
super.
That's my tip. So
I feel like I'm more prepared with every episode.
You know what's gonna happen? We're gonna be like, all right, episode 15, and then news is gonna break out that the zombies have finally risen from the grave, and everyone that's listened to 1 through 15 is gonna survive.
Right. And people are gonna be like, download ISC right now and learn how to do it.
Yeah, before electricity and the internet go away.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So that wraps up episode 7.
Absolutely. Do you want to talk about what we're...
Let's be honest with the kids. We really have no idea.
Time.
They'll probably be...
Send your input.
Yes.
I think I have a good idea what my TV show is going to be. I have no idea about a movie. I have no idea about a comic or a book. And I have a pretty good idea what my video game is going to be. So I'm half prepared.
I always have something for comics.
Right.
I've just got a big collection of that. Movies... I might actually talk about Rain Over Me next time.
Mm.
That was a really good movie.
Okay. Be prepared to be sad.
But I don't know. So yeah, we'll just leave you guys hanging with not sure what we'll talk about next. Maybe send us
some ideas.
Hell yeah.
Like Tom told you to do. And you can't be mad at Tom.
That's right.
It's impossible.
It is actually physically impossible to be mad at Tom. You actually, if you make fun of Tom, you usually end up apologizing to him because you feel bad that you've done that.
And other people yell at you. It's great.
It's great being
you
Tom.
You be nice to Tom.
Yeah.
Best phrase ever.
Yeah. So.
I'm Dan.
I'm Nate.
I'm Tom.
And injection complete.